probably flows in part at least from the pandemic, but there was a pretty serious one before that as well, and we know there's a big problem with mental ill health in this country that isn't addressed, sometimes to a deadly level, for both the person with the illness and sometimes other people at their hands. So we know there's a huge amount of social fabric problems. What are we going to do about it, and what role does drugs play in all of this?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 2 o'clock, the man accused of driving into a crowd during Liverpool's victory parade on Monday has appeared in court. 53-year-old Paul Doyle is facing charges including dangerous driving and GBH with intent. He's due to enter a plea in August. LBC's Liam Gotting reports from Liverpool Crown Court.
Our provisional trial date, should it get to that stage, was set for the 24th of November this year. The court was told a trial could last between 3 to 4 weeks, but Mr. Doyle will next appear at Liverpool Crown Court on the 14th of August to enter a plea.
Former comedian and actor Russell Brand has denied charges of rape and sexual assault. The 49-year-old is accused of several offences against four women between 1999 and 2005. He's due back in court in May next year. Former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams has won a libel action against the BBC. He said he was defamed by a story alleging he sanctioned the killing of a former Sinn Féin official, which he denies. Mr. Adams has been awarded £84,000 in damages. He's been speaking outside the High Court in Dublin.
I'm very mindful that this case could have been settled. The licence payers are going to pay for this. No, the BBC aren't using their own money. Spotlight aren't using their own money. It's the licence payers, and as Paul Tweet has said, this could have been sorted out a long time ago.
Schools and hospitals in England are going to be given a package of £1.2 billion for urgent repairs. It's hoped the money will be used to fix crumbling buildings and remove toxic asbestos. And Liverpool have agreed to let Trent Alexander-Arnold join Real Madrid 29 days early. The Spanish side will pay £10 million so the defender can play in this summer's Club World Cup. In the City, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 29 points at 87.46. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.18. LBC weather largely dry with sunny spells. A few showers will develop in South and East Scotland and Northern Ireland. Cloudy with some patchy light rain in South Wales. A high of 25 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. In light of this rather gimmicky exercise that Robert Jenrick engaged in on TFL to point out the lawlessness around fare dodging, I've decided to expand that conversation and make it about a lot more than fare dodging. Feel free to talk about fare dodging if you want. But there's a lot more to talk about. And to my mind, the whole conversation, although the problems are very different and very varied in seriousness, they're all part of the same thing, which is a kind of weakening of the thin veneer of civilization, because it's always thin, I'm afraid, that veneer of civilization that allows us to live well. It's an important veneer, but there's a lot of dark stuff immediately below the surface, because human beings are strange creatures. All of us are. I just think we've reached a point where, despite the best efforts of many parents, many teachers, police officers, the courts, all of the above, like everybody else, has faced years and years of difficulty, of austerity, of the world changing in very particular ways. Think of social media, think of the onslaught of drugs as it's, sort of the permutations of drug taking over the years and what that's done to various communities, and how we legislate around that, how we police drugs, all of it. But it is all part of where that is breaking. It's all part of that veneer of civilization being damaged as well. And I have mentioned a number of times, and I'm aware it's lower down the pecking order. This business of people forgetting how to behave in public. And again, I don't mean in a rigid, you know, jumped up way where you can't do this and you can't do that. I don't mean, you know, we can't live our lives in a fairly relaxed way. I think we can and we should. But some people have relaxed way too much in public and think they can do anything in public that they might do in their own home or in a place with their friends. Louisa has texted. She says, how can we expect parents to teach children anything when they themselves are the worst in public places? For example, giving kids phones with the volume up to keep them quiet. There's nothing worse than the noise of cartoons or kids coming from a neighbouring table when in a restaurant, but it is extremely common. And you're right, it is not just kids on phones by any means. But I am very aware that the phones thing is way down the pecking order when you look at the other kinds of crimes that we're seeing, many of which are going, well, they're noticed by the individuals around them at the time it happens, but they're unnoticed by the police. They're unnoticed by the courts because people aren't reporting them, or the police, when they are alerted, aren't doing a great deal about some of them for one reason or another, not always the police's fault. We learned today that half of Class A drug users are let off by police without punishment. 48% of people caught in possession of hard drugs like cocaine and heroin are let off without any criminal sanction. Only a third of Class A possession offences resulted in a charge. Most are handed community resolutions, not even a sentence, just a resolution to accept responsibility for what you've done and say that you won't do it again, which is hardly a punishment, is it? So what do we do about this? Because everything in between, you know, you've got violence against women and girls, which has been going unpunished for a huge, well, forever, frankly, and we know it's endemic. The chief, the commissioner of the Met said it earlier this week. But I think drugs are central to this as well. What drugs have done and are doing to our communities. I'm keen to talk for a moment before I speak with you to LBC Scotland correspondent Alan Szyszynski, who recently spoke to frustrated residents around Glasgow's drug consumption rooms. Now, Alan, you and I spoke on the day that this consumption room opened, with, you know, great hopes of it controlling and keeping safe both the user and the people around the user. But residents haven't really found it so, have they?
No, they certainly have not. And in terms of their complaints, I'll come to them in just a second, Sheila. I think it's right to start by saying the line, if you want, from health officials, because they do give us stats on how the safe consumption room, as it's known, has been operated. And they say that since we spoke in January when it opened, Sheila, 250 people have used it at least once, 2,000 injections have taken place, and 30 medical emergencies have been helped. That's overdoses they're talking about. So what they say in terms of the positives of this, they say that's 2,000 injections that would have taken place on the streets that now have not. It's potentially 30 lives saved as well. However, first of all, the argument here is that they are not actually getting these people into any sort of rehab services, that all they are doing is keeping people in this circle. And that's before we get to the community concerns, because you're right, I've spent a lot of time in this community, and people say that this has made things a lot worse. The reasons they give, they say it's attracted more drug users to the area, the Carlton community, as you could expect. They say that other users then come here because they know there will be people with drugs in the area, and that that also attracts drug dealers to target this community too. Really a perfect storm. And their big complaint is that because the centre is only open from 8 a.m. until 9 p.m, it's not a 24-hour service, all of these drug users stay in the area overnight and they inject in the community. They inject on doorsteps outside of people's homes. Some really horrible tales I've heard of all sorts that goes on around here. And I did get shown around the area about 2 weeks ago to see what I was told would be needles everywhere. I presume that was a bit of an exaggeration, to be honest with you. But I went out with one local resident, a woman called Angela. We went into her front garden. Within 30 seconds, we found 5 dirty needles discarded right in her front garden.
That would be so dispiriting, wouldn't it, if it was, well, and upsetting, actually, if it was yours. And the wider context, Alan, in Scotland on drugs, and it's not, you know, it's not the only place clearly that has these problems, but boy, did it have a problem. Does it have a problem with drug deaths and the health implications of drug taking? Has been really bad in Scotland, hasn't it?
Yep, still the drug death capital of Europe, I'm afraid to say. We had just over 1,100 people, I believe I'm right in saying, in the latest stats that died due to drugs. That's worse than England, Wales, Northern Ireland. As I say, the worst in England. And we did think we were seeing a very gradual, slight decline in these numbers just coming out of COVID. But in the last year, they rose sharply again. Massive concerns about the effects of new drugs on the streets. Nitazenes, you'll have heard a lot about, these substances that are essentially replicating fentanyl, which, if you're putting that into Scotland's system, where you have so many people dying from heroin and cocaine cocktails, what are called snowballs, putting something into that ecosystem that can be 100 times stronger, it really paints a bleak picture. And as I say, the argument from campaigners is, if there is no rehab beds to get people out of the circle that they find themselves in, then what are you actually doing to help?
Thank you very much, Alan. Good to talk to you and to be reminded of just what drugs can do to a community. Alan Zizinski, LBC Scotland correspondent. Lots of you keen to talk on this. Chris has called from Preston. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Sheila.
You were a police officer?
No, I was a police officer for, I thought it would be a forever career after leaving the military, but after just under 2 years, I left because I was paranoid that I would be either put in prison myself or sacked, because if you wanted to do any proper policing or use force to save, to look after yourself or a colleague or something like that, the police themselves would jump on you. You know, it was awful. Like you're there to protect the public. You know, there's four instances where I was referred to the IOPC someone with a machete had just slashed someone. I chased them. Well, the colleague I was with didn't want to chase them because they were scared of what would happen. So it was just me, and I was fighting with him. I had to put my thumb in his eye because I really had a knife. And I was referred to the IOPC and suspended. I'm like, how? I'm there potentially fighting for my life, and there's someone that's literally just committed a serious offence, and yet I was referred to the IOPC for trying to protect myself. How does that happen?
And was that a common fear amongst your colleagues?
Yeah, all the time. People were scared to get into conflict, and they do things like, you know, not go on blue lights to a grade one, you know, like a serious ongoing offence that was happening then and there. They would slow down so they didn't have to deal with it, or hopefully someone would run away. And I couldn't stomach that, and I would go anyway, and you know. But they're worried for their job, because the drama is, if you get, we see it with the armed police officers recently, and I really feel for them. They do their duty to the best they can, you know, and then all of a sudden their lives are ruined, and it's just, it's unfair. We've taken the bite out of crime and punishment, and we're just left with, oh, we'll do more, we'll do this. Yet there's no actual punishment. There's no, you look at prison.
We're slapping
prison
wrists.
Beyond soft.
We're slapping wrists. And what were you seeing out there in Preston, Chris? Because Preston has its issues.
So I wasn't in Preston.
Oh, weren't you?
I was in Greater Manchester.
Okay, but just up the road. What were you seeing? Yeah. What were you dealing with? The kind of things you were dealing with?
Everything. I would deal with. I was a response officer, so I would deal with, you know, menial things like, you know, someone called me a nasty name on Facebook, and you'd have to go out and spend time to do that. And then, you know, the next thing you're dealing with is, you know, someone's tried to burn the mum's house down.
Oh,
and it's literally, you would go from one to the other. It was carnage. But
you know, you've been in the military as well. You know, you've seen a bit of the world and people. What's your assessment of where we are in society?
I've seen far more law and order in third world countries than I ever see here these days. It's really sad, and it's, you know, I'm thinking of leaving the UK with my wife and young son, because I'm worried of how the UK is going to look in 10, 15 years' time.
Where will you go, do you think?
I was looking at maybe a Channel Island. Part of my work, I sort of has to remain UK based, so I'd look at like the Channel Islands or something like that, where it's a lot safer. Or even we're even looking exactly, yeah, even looking at the US or Canada, and that's got its own problems. Don't get me wrong, but
everywhere does, doesn't it? Yeah,
we're very worried. And the biggest part is kids, like the kids committing crime. Just they didn't care. I went to a job where two kids had put a brick through their schoolmate's window, you know. And I get there, and they're there laughing outside, and I chase them, and I caught one of them, right, and I tackled him because he's running off.
That's really serious, isn't it? You know, I mean, people think, oh, a kid with a brick, oh, come on, it's nothing. That is extraordinary. If I did that when I was a kid, I swear to God, other than functional stuff, my parents wouldn't have spoken to me for a year.
Yeah, my parents would have probably dragged me behind the car on the M6, right?
Mine would have thrown a brick at me.
But the drama is that they genuinely don't care. And it's like, the one thing that hit, and what really annoyed me was the one thing that the child was upset about that I tackled, and, you know, and then his parents, I tried to take him back to the nick and I wanted to prosecute him. You know, he was over the age, I think he was 14, 15, right? I rang through and they said, no, we're full. And they're like, you need to take him home. We'll deal with the crime later on. And it eventually got NFA'd, which is no further action, because they didn't. They just said they didn't have the capacity to prosecute. And you feel sorry for the young kid and his family that are obviously just stressed from it. But when I took him back to his mum's, this child had committed the offence. His mum was like, "Why did you tackle him in the grass? You've got his track is dirty." I was like, "You're not worried that he put a brick through someone's window?"
Oh my God!
And she was like, that kids will be kids, but now look at him, his trackies are dirty. And honestly,
did she really say kids will be kids?
I honestly swear on my life, I swear on mine and my son's life, I was livid. I was like, your son has literally just put a brick through someone's window. And she went, yeah, but like, oh, and just brushed it and didn't care. And it's like the lack of parenting. And I feel real sorry for teachers, that teachers are
too.
Getting the pressure to be parents. We have absolutely lost our Western values of traditional parenting and taking responsibility for your actions. We farm it off. We don't care.
I don't think that's a Western value, though.
Maybe not a Western value, but our traditional values. I'm hard, but, you know, I love this country and I still do, but I'm absolutely, I don't know what it's
going to
look like.
How old are your children?
Yeah. 7 months old. I'm petrified.
Baby, yeah.
I'm absolutely petrified of what the world's going to look like.
I think that's normal for new parents.
Well, I think it's
how am I going to keep this baby safe? Yeah,
it's less normal for people that have actually seen what society is the real upsetting bit is 90% of the population are normal people that appreciate it all. It's, we get ruled by this silent minority the loud minority that ruin it for everyone else, and we don't take any action. And going back to your point earlier, what could we do in the community? I would personally like to see a reward system for community arrests. If someone, you see them breaking the law, there's got to be careful that you don't get into like lynch mobs or anything, but something of you would detain them and you would be rewarded for being a good citizen. I think that would be a possibility, but...
We've got Pride of Britain for that, Chris.
Well, yeah, but the drama is...
I'm not sneering at Pride of Britain. It's a fabulous thing, but it's... Yeah, you're talking about something more more sort of pervasive, aren't you, in our society?
Yeah, but we just let people, like, your last call, your drugs and stuff, and there's always been problems with drugs and there always will be, but, like, how often do we now how often do you walk down the road and you smell someone, you know, smoking a joint in front of community police, CPSOs and, you know, police officers, and they just don't do anything. And it boils me because I'm like, this is basics that we just let people get away with. And it's broken windows theory. Someone gets away with one thing and all of a sudden it just goes to hell in a handbasket because we don't want to do it. It's not my job.
And nobody takes responsibility.
And the people whose job it is, and I genuinely feel for the police now, like... They want to do their jobs, they really do, but they're worried the second they do it, they'll get absolutely smashed. And then we look at the courts and we're so soft on prison. I don't know if you've ever been to a prison, Sheila, but I don't know what you thought. I thought they were very soft for what they
were. The one I went to wasn't. I've been to a number, but the Category A one I went to in Wakefield wasn't soft.
So I've been to Wakefield. I actually thought that was quite relaxed. I've been to Cat A and Cat B, and I genuinely think compared to what normal society is like, but for a Cat A prison, you've committed some of the worst offences you can commit. I'm sick of giving prisoners all the rights in the world. They've been convicted. Let's look at the El Salvador model. They've gone from one of the most dangerous countries in the Western Hemisphere to one of the safest. You know, why
what did they do with their prisons?
They basically sacked off the fact that, you know, they withdrew a lot of human rights of what, you know, over here we get very upset about, but they basically took all that down. If you're a gang member and you're caught doing, you know, X, Y, Z, you're in prison. You're in 50 to 100 man rooms, and that is it. That would solve a lot of the prison population.
Well, something tells me that's not the direction of travel, Chris. But anyway, listen, thanks very much for your call. Great to get your reflections on your time in the force as well. Thank you, Chris, in Preston at 219.
LBC.
Imagine your dream holiday made possible by comparing cheap flights on Kayak, walking on an unspoilt goes on for miles beach on the Sardinian coast, plunging into the splendor of an idyllic lagoon in Greece. Ah, yes, this is the life. All you have to do is actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare prices from hundreds of travel sites and airlines to find your dream deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Chatelier Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand finished, and expertly installed. Make your home Chatelier Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco. Every little helps.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's get straight to your calls. Kaz in Croydon. Kaz, how do we save civilization in the UK?
Okay, well, Sheila, it's been really interesting because people, I'm going to assume that the generation in their 60s and 70s are the ones who are calling in. And they're making things such as society speak so much better. But can I just remind you of the Vietnam War in 1968 when the hippie flower power, taking drugs, mushrooms was introduced to society? Yeah. Whose generation started that? That generation started the drug taking. Okay, so, you know, for people to say that drugs have flooded society, it was brought in by that generation in their 60s and their 70s. Mm. In addition, a few programs ago, somebody said, I think it was James O'Brien, a lot of the mental health issues at the moment, this is arguable, but it's over-diagnosing, okay? And some could argue it's linked to benefits, okay? So again, that's not a problem of the people causing that problem, that's a government issue. And lastly, who are the parents of the people who are having these teenagers nowadays? Again, it's the 60s and 70s parents. If you think about it,
well, they're probably 80s and 90s. If it's teenagers they weren't born then,
surely. So all these problems have been caused by that generation who seem to moan and blame foreigners or blame immigration on the problems today. Well, really, they're the ones who started all the issues we're having today.
Well, I haven't.
Okay, so I think they need to look at their history and look at the perspective. And the African and the Indian and the Chinese, all the societies that were dominated and controlled, they don't have these social issues. So if it's caused by foreigners and all these problems we're having in society, how come those communities don't have the same problems that Europe is having? Okay, so they need to look inwards and see who started the drugs, who was sitting in jail smoking weed all day.
Can I say anything?
Of course you can.
Oh, that's nice.
Of course you can.
Well, I'm pleased.
Please do.
in terms of the historical arc of drugs since the 60s, although drugs predated the 60s, of course.
Of course they did.
But you're in terms of the, you know, I mean, it was gin in the days of Hogarth. It was, you know, there was heroin, you know, all kinds of drugs have been around for centuries and centuries. But each generation has its own problems, doesn't it? And therefore passes on its own problems to the next. And, you know, the calls I've got this afternoon have been from a number of different ages. They're not all middle-aged or old people complaining about young people.
But and they're the main ones who complain.
Well...
And they're the main ones who blame on the immigrants.
Well, they haven't...
They're really the same problems.
Well, nobody's been complaining anything on the immigrants this hour. I wouldn't let somebody just blame things on immigrants, Kaz. I never let that happen. And when you talk about other countries... You think other countries around the world don't have drug problems. You think other countries around the world that may not have the kind of drug problems we have, but have child marriage problems or have even deeper poverty, way deeper poverty problems than we have. You know, there is no utopian country in this world, and it certainly isn't
They're
the UK.
Poor.
Oh, no, you didn't draw
Colonialism
that, did you?
Made them poor.
Ah, yeah, there we are. That's right, speech made. Thank you, Kaz. It's all colonialism. Ian in Cardiff. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm okay, I think, Ian. How are you?
Good, I'm good, thanks, yes.
What would you like to say?
Okay, sorry. I returned from China. I worked in China for 2 years. I came back about 2 or 3 years ago. I taught in a very high-achieving international school, but it was all Chinese students. I've just come back to the UK, and I'm from Cardiff, born and bred. And it's just I feel like I'm living in a low income country. I really do. The social problems that exist.
Well, you are in many cases, Ian.
Well, yeah. Compared to China, I know we get indoctrinated in this country with negative press about China all the time. That's all we hear is negative things, and I kind of get that because they are essentially our enemy.
But it's not a comparable country in the slightest, is it? It's going through. And has just gone through a turbo speed industrial revolution. Therefore, massive middle class has been produced.
Absolutely.
So people will be benefiting from that and enjoying that. It is an authoritarian society. So any lack of crime probably leans heavily on that. And this isn't propaganda. This is a fact. And and it does. You know, it had that bizarre one child policy that misshaped. It doesn't have it anymore, does it? Hasn't it?
No.
That did damage, huge damage. And then you've got the Uyghur situation, which is an abomination. You know, this isn't propaganda. These are facts.
No. I appreciate all of that. But when I went there, I travelled all around China. Every holiday I had, I got on their fast-speed trains. You know, what takes 3 hours here on a supposed high-speed train took 27 minutes there.
Wow.
For next to no money at all.
Did you have any eyebrows left at the end of it?
I went all around China. Right? I made a point of kind of trying to get into the culture and meet Chinese people.
Yeah, right?
And without exception, really, everybody I met were happy. Everybody I met were respectful. So respectful, and not just to me as an outsider, but to each other. They all felt, and you know, they go on about CCTV cameras everywhere, blah 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 blah. You know,
But they are here.
London, I think London,
they are
London
here
is,
too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing about China is they're really good, the CCTV cameras.
Well, their face identifying all the time.
Yeah, of course they are.
We've got those now as well.
And I asked the people what they thought of the cameras. They said, well, it stops any crime. That's how they looked at it, right? I asked girls that I taught, 18-year-olds that I taught, how do you feel about walking across Shenzhen? That's the city I was in, 17 million people at 1 o'clock in the morning. Would you do that on your own? And they went, well, of course I would. Why wouldn't I? You know? It was not a utopia to an extent, and I'm not naive enough to not realise that there are a lot of terrible things that go on there as well. But I just felt it was all about family values. You are taught to respect your elder, and you're taught to respect one another. And it's a cultural difference, I think. And unfortunately, I think we're never going to get back to that in the UK, ever. And it's quite sad.
Well, we don't have to get back to anything, do we? We have to deal with what we've got now and try and improve it, I suppose. But I do think, you know, the old hits are the best hits, which is, you know, a bit of self-respect, a bit of mutual respect, a little bit of discipline. And again, I'm not talking about marching up and down the streets and being terrified of saying boo to a goose. I'm not talking about that kind of discipline. I'd hate to live in a world like that. But this complete... my way is my way and you can't do anything about it is just awful.
And
that's what we've got going on in this country at the moment.
Yeah. I've been teaching 36 years, right? I taught for 32 of those years in a really deprived school in the city. And they were actually some of the happiest times of my life, right? Because I was making a difference to people's lives.
Yeah.
I teach now in a very, very high achieving sixth form college, 90% A star A. Ironically enough, they're all Chinese. It's an international school, right? And they're like open mouthed. I live in Cardiff. I mean, I'm proud of my city, you know, but they say, I can't believe what you put up with. The number of homeless people, the drug taking, the smelling of weed everywhere you go. And
I don't know what it is in me, but I never smell it. Maybe I don't, because I don't, I've never used it. I'm not sure I even know what it smells like. Maybe I smell it, but don't know that that's what I'm smelling. Anyway, I've stopped making sense, Ian. Thank you very much for your call. Ian in Cardiff. This is down to lack of community. Sorry, Emma, I've read that one already. Dee says, I've seen shoplifters casually walk out of a well-known supermarket without being stopped. Also witnessed a couple of young men jumping the turnstiles at a London station right in front of the staff. I spoke to the station staff who said they'd been instructed not to confront these people. I totally understand. Why should they risk their lives for a few quid train fare? Says Dee. Thank you very much, Dee, for that. Coming up after the news headlines, going to talk to Andy Hughes again, LBC's crime correspondent. You'll know that we spoke yesterday about the numbers of children taking knives into school and why they do it, and how teachers and special schools beyond ordinary school are trying to help those kids that use them or take them into school. He's got an update on where they're getting them from in a moment. It's 2:30. Let's get the headlines first from Amelia Cox.
The man accused of driving into people at Liverpool's Premier League title parade has appeared in court. 53-year-old Paul Doyle is charged with several offences, including GBH with intent. Former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams has won a libel action against the BBC. He's won £84,000 in damages over a report containing allegations he sanctioned the murder of a British agent, which he denies. And Russell Brand has pleaded not guilty to charges of rape and sexual assault. The 49-year-old is due to stand trial in June next year. LBC weather, largely dry with sunny spells. A few showers will develop in south and east Scotland and Northern Ireland. Cloudy with some patchy light rain in South Wales. A high of 25 degrees.
This is LBC.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
When you're transported somewhere you've never been. When you discover hidden gems and amazing sights. When you just can't wait to pack your bags.
It's just stunning.
We should definitely go there.
I'm already looking at flights.
Nice.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can enjoy a world of travel from the comfort of your sofa. Search TV licence together.
Thanks to their unique boutique spirit, there really is nothing quite like a Saga River Cruise. There are the elegantly designed Spirit ships, the all-inclusive dining, and of course, Saga's carefully selected excursions. You know, they'll even drive you to and from the airport with their nationwide chauffeur service.
How long now, Charles?
Oh, half an hour.
Marvellous. Search Saga River Cruises. Experience is everything. 2026 season on sale now. Chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply over 50s only.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with Sheila Fogarty. Text 84850.
Now, You might remember yesterday, if you were listening, you will, had a conversation with Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent, about children taking knives into school and why they do and the prevalence of it. Andy's back with me today because the same work you've been doing for LBC, Andy, has found that children as young as 14 are selling knives to other children on apps like Snapchat.
Yeah, that's right. So yesterday we revealed that children as young as 9 are being caught with knives in schools. In today's report, we're going to be exploring how these kids are getting hold of these deadly weapons. So I started off by speaking to an ex-gang member who explained just how easy this is.
They'd be selling stuff, like selling knives and that. Like, kids be buying stuff, like they'd be going and buying knives and the parents don't even be knowing about it. Parents should be checking phones and stuff to see like what their kids are doing. Most kids, where they get their knives from is online.
So the sale of social media the sale of knives on social media platforms is a massive issue, and the police are really focusing on that. And last week we were invited on a raid with the Met Police's specialist knife crime task force, and the suspects were two brothers, 14 and 16. And here's a little snippet of that operation.
Yeah, we've been investigating social media accounts that sell knives. By doing that, they can bypass all the security legislation that prevents them from selling to children. So we look at identifying those people who sell prohibited and dangerous weapons.
I mean, we're talking big zombie knives, like deadly weapons here, aren't we?
Big and small knives, so zombie knives, but also smaller knives, legal knives.
As we know, a lot of these knives are ending up in the hands of children, aren't they?
They are, and that's why we're taking action against these sellers, because they can circumvent all the legislative provisions put in place to stop that from happening. If you're in the right circles, they are visible to you, and if you're in the right areas, so children can access them and children can buy them.
So there we are. We have evidence of children selling zombie knives, deadly weapons, to other children.
I mean, this fits in perfectly, in a way, to the conversation I'm having this hour about the degree to which all bets are off, really. And, that we're not fools. We know that crime has always existed. We know that children have always and forever been involved in crime, either by exploitation or because of, you know, just their lives being chaotic for one reason or another. But it kind of begs the question. Not why bother. I think we should bother with limits on knife sales. Of course we should. But it does make you think, oh, God, if there's always another place they can go and get them, and they will, and they'll know, and then they'll tell their mates, and their mates will tell their mates, and on it goes. You do get the feeling you're fighting a bit of a losing battle.
Yeah, and that's what the police are trying to get on top of. Snapchat, in particular, is basically a black market Amazon for kids who want to get hold of illegal knives, illegal drugs, anything illegal. That's where they go. And there's specific codes that these kids use. So it's like a hidden language that only the gangs and the kids who want to buy knives will know. For example, if you wouldn't just go on there and say, can I buy a zombie knife? You'd say, you shot in ZKs. And just and then little emojis, like the devil emoji means one thing, and then a cross emoji, and the cross refers to death, of course. So it's all these little...
Again, something that emerged in adolescence, the drama, didn't it, about these emojis that the adults knew nothing about, but it was a coded language for the kids.
So it's very difficult to keep on top of. But the Met Police and other forces, which have this problem, they've got specialist units and specialist officers who look into this. They know the language. But as soon as one bit of language is caught on, they'll move on and then find another way.
You know, I spoke to the mother of a young boy who died. He wasn't involved in gangs or anything like that, but he was stabbed to death at school or outside school. And she has since been campaigning about it. I've spoken to a number of parents who've gone down that route, sadly, after the loss of their child.
Yeah.
And she challenged the seller of the knife that killed her son. It was an adult.
Right.
And his attitude was, I didn't stab anyone.
Well, there you go. I'm not surprised to hear that. It is astounding, but I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. I mean, the brutality of some of the people and some of the young kids that are dealing in knives now.
And the clear carelessness of some adults around them as well.
Well, yeah.
You know, if you're selling knives to kids as an adult,
yeah,
then all bets are off, really.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and also, the gang member I spoke to, even he was the ex-gang member now. He was telling me that the parents should be doing more to keep an eye on what their kids are looking at. This is an ex-gang member who's kind of still in that world a bit, giving a warning out to parents because he knows how dangerous it is. I mean, he started carrying a knife at 11, and this is where he was getting his knives. But I think one of the real issues is social media companies and the police have never really been best friends. We know that.
No.
There has been a little bit of progress made in the last couple of years because Snapchat in particular has set up its own kind of UK bureau which deals with police and stuff like that. So the line of communication is a bit clearer. But the problem the authorities have, and this is all across the world really, is Snapchat isn't a UK-based company, so every single country that they operate in has different laws. So for them to keep on top of what's legal and illegal in every different country is hard enough for them to do.
Yeah, it's a many-headed beast, isn't it? It's hard to control. Yeah, thank you very much for that, Andy. Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent. It kind of goes from bad to worse. I'm sorry to depress you on a Friday afternoon, everybody. Sorry about that. Simon, thank you, Andy. Simon has called from Oxford Street to carry on our conversation about the kind of lawlessness happening around you, whether it's where you live or where you work or on your way to work. Simon, hi.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to say, I don't think you can actually dissect this down to one particular cause.
No.
There's going to be many contributions towards whichever one it's been talking about.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the big ones was when we, I think, did we reclassify cannabis many years ago? Well, not many years ago, but about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And also the fact that the government back then also cut numbers to the police. So basically what happened was, that formed a catalyst for basically people not being arrested for having a joint on them, not learning about consequences, and so therefore the people that did that then pushed the barriers even further. You know, what else can I get away with? So I think it was, because of that, and we've now ended up with the society where it's a normalised thing where they just push the barriers.
I'm also interested in what we do with children who we know are being raised by dangerous crooks, like, you know, gang leaders, drug dealers, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there is that aspect.
Well, we know there is. I mean, the man who killed Olivia Pratt-Corbell, he was offending from the age of about 12 or 13, stealing catalytic converters, stealing cars, graduated to drug running, graduated to drug dealing, all under the auspices of his criminal family. And in Italy, in Sicily, and wider Italy, they've started to take children out of those homes, out of mafia homes. Because that's you're talking about, a kind of quasi-mafia there. They take the kids out of mafia homes as an act of safeguarding of the child, but it also stops the continuum of the crime. And I think there's something in that.
Yeah, well, I think that's what social services need to look into. To be honest, I mean,
they can only do what the law allows them to do. I think that would probably involve some kind of law change. But that's
the thing. Yeah. I think the law's just too soft at the moment, and things are being reiterated to the fact where we've got the society that we have today. I mean, yeah, I remember back in 2000, if you were caught with a joint, you'd be arrested in the police cell. And possibly charged and taken to court. Mm. Now it's just like you just get it taken off of you, you know.
Do you think
a slap on the wrist?
Do you think cannabis shouldn't have been declassified?
No, not at all. Because if you keep it up there with the high end part of I can't think of the word to use, but yeah, if you keep it up there with the rest of them, then the police have got no choice but to do what they have to do or what they should be doing, really. I mean, I'm not blaming the police, obviously, because, you know, they've got problems of their own in their own institution. But it's, you know, I think that, for me, looking back on it and reflecting, I think that was the catalyst start of it. Society that we have today, basically reclassifying the drug and not being able to not being able to arrest people that have just had a joint on them.
Because there's the opposite argument, that, and I don't know, I genuinely don't know what I think about this or which side I come fully down on, but there's the opposite argument, Simon, which is that we need to just get real about drugs and decriminalise them all. Do you think that would be a disaster?
In Britain, yes.
Why specifically in Britain?
Because we're barely equipped to deal with it now.
we're barely able to deal with alcohol, never mind declassifying all the other drugs. Thank you, Simon. Andre's call from Salisbury. Hello, Andre.
Hello, my dear. I'm just wondering, where has law and order gone? Because over the last 40 years, the law system and its all walks of life in the judicial system has been watered down every year that goes by.
You think so?
I know so. I know so from a fact. I got a case for my daughter who's fighting custody of her child because she's got an abusive spouse. And he's got the kid, and she's brilliant with kids. Now, that to me was ordered by the courts, because he's a liar, and she couldn't lie enough to get the kid back. That to me is an injustice.
And what do you see around you where you live as well?
Oh, we've had crime in Salisbury, Amesbury, Durrington, Netherhaven, everywhere, and it's just getting worse and worse, and they're getting younger.
Is it ruining where you live?
It is, because we have now got we've got immigrants now causing hassle in the main shops like Tesco's and Sainsbury's. They're going in stealing food and other bits and pieces, medicines and what have you, and just walking out with it. They're worse than gypsies.
All right. Well, they certainly won't be the only people committing crimes in Salisbury, if you've been saying it's happening for years and years, Andre, but thank you for your call. Andre in Salisbury, it's 2:45.
This is LBC.
Already daydreaming about that wave of hot air as you step off the plane? EasyJet has flights from just £30 one way to over 130 holiday hotspots and hidden gems. It's time to get your summer on. Book now at easyjet.com. Get out there. Selected flights June to September. Limited availability. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
You could be £10,000 richer just in time for summer. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email, or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Body pain might not sound like this.
Oh.
Or this.
Oh.
But it might sound like this.
I'm fine.
Hiding your body pain behind a smile? Let us help. With up to 12 hours of uninterrupted muscle and joint pain relief. Voltarol, the joy of movement. Voltarol Joint and Back Pain Relief 2.3% gel contains diclofenac diethylammonium. Always read the label.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
Leading Britain's conversation. Sheila Fogarty. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
want to talk about two particular crimes that have happened in the last few days, both in London, one at Hampstead Tube Station and one in Stamford Hill. A Jewish boy was taken to hospital following what is being described as a racially motivated assault. British Transport Police are investigating this. Three Jewish boys were threatened with a knife by six or seven individuals at Hampstead Underground Station. This happened on Bank Holiday Monday, according to the Shomrim Neighbourhood Watch. One of the boys has been taken to hospital for observation, and the charity has since appealed for information about the incident, as has British Transport Police. They're confirming it was called to reports of a racially aggravated assault and a robbery at the station. Transport Police have said officers were called at around 8:30 on the 26th of May following reports of this racially aggravated assault and robbery. Inquiries are ongoing, and they call for anyone with information to contact British Transport Police by texting 61016. 61016. And then a different case, a shop in Stamford Hill, a Jewish-run shop in Stamford Hill, very badly vandalised and then daubed with red paint, but clearly the inference being blood, fake blood. You know, these are serious crimes. Clearly the one against the business was certainly pretty obviously an anti-Semitic attack on a premises. And, you know, if the attack on the Jewish boys was motivated by the same thing, you know, this is serious stuff on our streets that we've got to look at. We have to look at. Stephen Silverman joins me, Director of Investigations and Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining me today, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Sheila.
In the context of both of these crimes, how much do they, in a sense, illustrate and possibly even add to the fear that lots of Jewish people are feeling in this country at the moment?
Well, this is the trajectory that we've been on now for I think it's 20 months. We have seen week after week of marches that vilify Israel and at which anti-Semitism is on full display. We've seen graffiti, we've seen calls for boycotts, we've seen... This isn't the first instance of vandalism, nor is it the first instance of violence against Jewish children. And this is what happens when the government, I mean the criminal justice system, fails to apply the same level of sanction to anti-Semitism that it does towards victims of other forms of hatred.
And where do you say there is evidence of that failure to sanction? Is it connected to the sum of the signs and activities and chants on the protests, or is it connected to individual crimes such as the ones we're discussing?
Well, let me give you a couple of examples. Recently, within the last couple of weeks, there was a protest and there was a pro-Israel counter-protest. On the counter-protest side, a protester held up a placard satirizing Hassan Nasrallah, who is the late leader of the proscribed terrorist group Hezbollah. He was arrested in case the other side found the poster offensive. The veteran LGBTQ campaigner Peter Tatchell was taking part, I think about a week to 10 days ago, in a march organised by the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. He was holding a sign that vilified Israel, but also demanded that Hamas stop killing people. The organisers of that march asked him to be arrested, for him to be arrested because of that statement, and the police obliged. It is sheer lunacy when people are arrested for holding up signs simply stating that proscribed terrorist groups are either worthy of ridicule or should stop what they are doing. Now, when you compare that with the type of rhetoric, imagery, signs, symbols that we see on these anti-Israel marches that take place week after week through our capital city and elsewhere, the disparity could not be more shocking. And let's be very clear, these marches are not about calling for peace in Gaza. They are not about criticizing the Israeli government. They are about criticizing the very idea of Israel.
Can I just say, can I come in there? I think for a good number of those protesters, that is the case. But I think for a good number, it is not the case as well. Literally, having spoken to them, knowing some of the people who go there, it is about a desperate concern to see that killing stop in Gaza and for the hostages to be released, dead or alive, sadly. So, but I absolutely take your point about, I mean, I've been saying it since, you know, the week or two after October the 7th. It is clear what the spirit of some of those protesters are in significant numbers. And I've seen example after example where the police have turned a blind eye to it. I don't deny that for a second. But I just want to be fair to those people who go to that march out of a desperate concern for what's happening, because there are people in that mix who do, and they may be naive about some of the company they're keeping.
Well, while I do take your point, but I would say if I were attending a march this week, next week, the week after, because I was desperate to see peace somewhere, and every time I was seeing overt demonstrations of racism and hatred towards Jews, I would think twice and I might not join that march for the fourth week.
Same, yeah. What do we do to turn the dial here? Because it's vital that we do, isn't it? It's absolutely vital that we do.
It is. Well, we need government inaction is woeful. The inaction of the criminal justice system is equally woeful. The Metropolitan Police have done nothing to protect Jewish Londoners for the last 20 months. And the blame for that lies at the door of the commissioner, not the frontline officers, who have a very, very difficult job in these situations. Every civilization in which anti-Semitism has taken hold, and there are signs that it is really taking hold now, has failed. They have been failed societies. And we can't risk this because it's not just a threat to Jews. You know, there's an old saying that Jews are the canary in the coal mine. And that is because it's a warning sign that when anti-Semitism takes root, there is something very sick with our democracy. What we are seeing is a threat to our democracy, a threat to society, and a threat to the values that we all care about if they are to keep people of all minorities safe. And we need to see government and the criminal justice system step up. And if you look at what happened in Washington a couple of weeks ago when two young Israeli embassy staffers were murdered in cold blood, what did we get? Lots of warm words. Shock. They shouldn't have been shocked. It was obvious that this was going to lead to this. And it's business as usual. No meaningful action. We can't afford this kind of inertia for much longer.
Okay, I must leave it there. But thank you very much for speaking to me today, Stephen Silverman, Director of Investigations and Enforcement at the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. Robert's call from Streatham for a final word, a final thought on what we've been discussing this last couple of hours, actually. I said at the very beginning of the programme it was going to be crime heavy. And we have spoken about a number of crimes, court cases, all different in nature. And you've been talking to me about your own experience of crime, where you live, where you work. Robert, your thoughts on where we are at as a country, as a society, on all of this?
Good afternoon. I believe, to be honest with you, that things haven't changed drastically since like the 80s. A lot of this behaviour has been going on. There's always been an underbelly of kind of criminal, deviant, antisocial behaviour. And I've worked in youth offending for years, so I understand way before social media kicked in and started actually recording isolated events and then kind of putting a political agenda behind the way they're displayed. And just reading the comments, you can tell that people are triggered by one type of criminal behavior, but not anything to say about another type of criminal behavior because it doesn't fit the political agenda. So I think there's a lot of that stoking up.
I also give me an example of what you mean.
For example, you might see antisocial behavior displayed by a group of young white English kids, and the comments will pertain, you know, directly to their behaviour. Whereas if it was a set of brown kids, and I don't even know, it doesn't matter what brown, you read the comments, it just says anything from deport them to animals to you know, unashamed. All
skin,
sorts of
skin
personal...
colour first, action second.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so even when the police released the ethnicity of this man that mowed down the unfortunate fans at the football game.
Well, can we not talk about that? Because he allegedly did that and there's a court case happening. So should we just leave that?
Well, yeah, I'll leave that. I guess what I'm trying to say, I think the framing behind it for them is the fact that there's different reactions to different types of criminals. And I think...
Alleged. I'll have to leave it there, Robert, because if you're not going to do it, I'll do it for you. Just because we have to. We have to allow the law to take its course and we have to allow a case to be fairly dealt with, fairly heard, and that is as much for the accused as it is for society. So I'll leave it there with you, if I may. Thank you for your call, though, Robert. And you're right that you know, some of the issues that we've been seeing, been talking about, have been going on for a lot longer than just the last 10 years or so. I think social media, I know that was something you wanted to come on to, but we ran out of time. Social media has clearly turbocharged some of those activities as well, hasn't it? And made it easier, just as we were hearing from Andy Hughes, our crime correspondent, made it easier for kids to get hold of zombie knives from other kids. That's the online world making that possible. Thanks for your call, Robert. Coming up after the news at 3, we're going to take a different tack and talk about ADHD, but more specifically, the millions of people who think they or their children have it or have a kind of neurodiverse situation that they're dealing with but can't get a diagnosis. Are you amongst those millions?
On your radio, on the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 3 o'clock, a father of three accused of driving a car into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League title parade has appeared in court. 53-year-old Paul Doyle has been given a provisional trial date in November. He's yet to enter a plea.